And it's my pleasure to introduce Malachi, who will speak and share with us today. Thank you so much, Malachi. Floor is yours.
Thanks very much, Jim, and thanks everybody for being here. And I have, I think, been to a Tusnua meeting before, but it's some time ago. I got a phone call this morning from Mark, and it was nice to be asked. It's always nice to be asked to share at a meeting. I've had a very ordinary day. Mark caught me as I was in a supermarket, and then I came home and had lunch and did a pottering in the garden. And by the way, it's 7 o'clock. It's 6 o'clock in the evening in Ireland, so I know it. Not everybody's on the same time scale. And I've just had a very, gentle, different, very ordinary day. And what a great thing that is. I didn't have many ordinary days when I was drinking and using. And in fact, I didn't have any ordinary days when I was drinking and using. But because I was, permanently, I wasn't always drunk, but I was never sober. Sometimes I was more drunk than others. But it took me a long time to want. No, it took me a long time to need recovery. And one of the things I heard after I'd come to a few meetings was, you need to want it. With hindsight, I don't think I wanted it, but I knew I needed it. And I was, as the expression goes, and we hear it in the rooms that often, I was sick of being sick, and I was a daily drunk. And I loved I loved all the things about it for many, many years. I loved the occasion of drinking. I loved the whole business of being out the razzmatazz of social situations. And it bit me on the arse, in the end. It took away all of it. I came in here breathing, but not much more. I remember coming in on a Saturday night into a meeting in southern Spain, drunk, and it was very near where I lived, so I knew where the meeting was, because I lived in quite a small town. And I came in, and I was the and for anybody who has heard me before, they'll have heard me say it. I came into this meeting, and there was a man there who was probably as my age now, and he said, "You think you have a problem?" And I burst into tears. And he said, "That's okay." He said, "We've all cried in here." And I've never forgotten that, because suddenly I was in a place where people weren't pretending, and I came to realize that I had been pretending for a long, long time. And I just kept coming back to meetings, and it wasn't always easy in that first year or so. For more than the first year, but certainly in the first year, I was either high on the idea of how wonderful I was for not picking up a drink, or deeply depressed because I knew what would happen if I did pick up a drink. And uh, And I had no idea of, you know, how I felt. I was high or I was really, really low. And that was to last quite a while. I didn't really understand what was going on around me. I just knew to keep coming to meetings. And of course, in the first week, two weeks, I thought you were all saints, and I thought you were all like far superior to me, and I stayed around long enough to realize that happily I didn't have to live up to sainthood, because I wasn't really amongst that many saints. And you know, and so it went on. You know, my life cleared up. You know, my life cleared up, and I got a sponsor, and after a year, and it was a revelation to me to actually look beyond the words of the 12 steps. Because it was kind of easy to look at them and say, oh, I believe in that, I think that's right, and that's a good idea, and then to actually look at it properly on paper, which was the way I did it, because that was the way the guy who is still my sponsor suggested doing it. You know, and it was easy enough to accept that I was an alcoholic, and I was easy enough to, and I was powerless over alcohol, but it was not easy to accept that I was that my life was unmanageable. You know, that was a deep wound, because I had to tell you that, do you know who I used to be? And my idea of who I used to be was extraordinarily exaggerated in my head, and it was even more exaggerated when I told you about it, because I hadn't really come to terms with being an ordinary person, just one among many, you know. And that's not to say that I don't have talents. I may tell you about some of those, because I have talents and I'm not ashamed to talk about them. But at that time, I just thought it was about the equivalent of somebody in the theater saying, you know, my name was in bigger lights than everybody else's. And it just, you know, that just wasn't true. And I hadn't really looked. I could see where lying was part of my alcoholism and my drug addiction. I could see where that kind of conniving and protecting my whatever the substances or circumstances that I wanted to get off on. I could see where that applied to my lying, but I didn't see it with regard to my life in general. And my life in general, I mean, it would be a lie to say it was all a lie, but it was certainly not all very truthful. And one of the things that my sponsor gave me was the ability to trust and to be able to tell the truth, the bare truth. And the other thing that he said to me was, and the truth changes. So whatever your truth is today, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be the same tomorrow. You know, and lots of things happened in the following years. I, you know, my mom died, my sister died. These were, you know, my mum was, fortunately, I'd had a conversation with her the day before she died, on the telephone, and because she was in Dublin and I was still in Spain, and she and we laughed, and we laughed a lot, and that was one of the things that sobriety brought me. It brought me a relationship with my mother, who I was basically afraid of, and I thought she was terribly judgmental, and I thought she had all the rights to be judgmental, but I didn't like her. And when I got sober, I discovered a very funny, not liberal, but loose-ish kind of Irish Catholic mother, you know? And that was one of the first benefits, the real benefits of sobriety, apart from the obvious of waking up without the hangover and the what did I do and all of that. And you know, and I stayed in AA. I stayed in AA very, very closely. In fact, again, with hindsight, it's easy to say things in hindsight. But you know, I left. I didn't. I went to work and I went to AA meetings and I didn't do anything else, basically. I didn't do what AA or other 12-step programs promises you, you know, that you can actually embrace the world and the world is there to be embraced. I didn't. I stuck with AA people and AA meetings and work and I was fortunate. I worked as a I was a hairdresser by profession, and I had a small business of my own, which was by now it was okay. I mean, if I went back in history, I did all sorts of other stuff in that world before I went to Spain. But I also, while I was in Spain, hooked up with some production company. So I used to do work for television commercials. So that was an outlet, and I would go away for 3 or 4 days and do a commercial, and I got to know people there. But otherwise, I had always, as another thing I discovered with myself, I had always ghettoized myself, and that's to say that you know, I was hairdressing world. I was very, very much in that world and the people in it and all of that. I'm gay, so my socializing through the years until I went to Spain actually was only in gay bars, gay clubs, gay restaurants. I virtually didn't do anything. I didn't venture outside of those areas. And when I came into AA, I ghettoized myself again. You know, I came into AA yeah, I made it a ghetto. And I mean, that was just how it was. I have to say that I woke up to the fact, probably after 10 or 12 or 13 years, and realized that I wasn't embracing the world, and my visions were quite narrow, and also slightly judgmental of the world outside, you know. Now I was to go on, thankfully, to discover that the world outside, probably just like the world inside AA, has its downsides. But the world outside for me has been generous and friendly and nice and pretty even. But it took me quite a while to try and to try and step over the threshold into that world. I had been so compartmentalized for so long, and but that's, you know, when I say these things, this is not a criticism of fellowships, or fellowship people. It was me, you know, I was afraid. And so then I started to do stuff, and still going to AA, but I started to do stuff, and you know, I found myself in a place where I went basically into the world of Reiki and stuff like that, and I was, you know, this is a kind of frank and honest kind of sharing that I'm doing, possibly because I don't know many of you. You know, I found myself, I hadn't been in a relationship since I got sober. I left the relationship I'd been in, it was 15 years, and you know, the first 7 years were bliss, and the second 7 years were horrendous. And there's a lot of drugs and a lot of drink involved, and as I would still say, you know, I'm still afraid to enter into the world of relationships, like intimate relationships, and I don't even know that that's a terrible thing. It's just a fact, and it's sad. It's a sad fact. And if I were sponsoring me, I would probably be kind of wagging a finger and saying, "Get your arse out there." But but I'm not. So the fear remains. And I you know, in the year I've been in this fellowship for 30 years, because I've been supported, and because I've wanted to be in it, and because I wanted to stay sober. You know, but in 30 years, like, so many things have happened. You know, I left Spain 9 years ago. I came back to live in Ireland, which I was told had changed dramatically since I'd left it 40 years previously. I was to come back to an Ireland that looked the same, but if you scratch the surface, it hadn't changed at all. And and that's okay, you know. That's you know, again, you know, that's how I see it. Plenty of other people would see it differently. I've found out, like, at 63, coming back, it wasn't easy to connect with people, because the people I'd hung out with when I was 17, 19, they were, you know, their lives had changed completely, so had mine. So I haven't found the last 9 years easy, if I've sat back and thought about it too much. But I try not to. One of the things that I was told a long time ago, you know, try not to take myself too seriously, and I mean, I always have a danger of falling into that pit of taking myself too seriously, and it's loosened up a lot. But you know, as I say, that so many things happens in sobriety and in the years. I've had a lot of health problems since I've been back in Ireland. You know, again, it's they're age related. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they're age related anyway. You know, and bits are falling off, and bits are being replaced, and it's c'est la vie. You know, it's a. You know, it's I never, as I was actually writing to somebody this morning, and she had asked me how I was, and I said, well, I never quite know whether I am supposed to feel this way because I'm 72, or that there's something wrong. You know, it's I'm never quite accurate about I have a wonderful doctor, thankfully, who reassures me and has a waggy finger in my face occasionally to tell me that I better shape up and do more walking and stuff. But you know, and I try and pay attention to that. I have on the about 10 or 12 years into sobriety, I became extraordinarily depressed and suicidal, and I've had a history of attempted suicides during my 20s, and I knew this was a serious situation. That I contacted, it turned out to be the right person who put me in touch with another right person. And I went to see them, and they kind of gave me a sharp slap across the face and said, look at this aspect of your life, which they were also extremely kind, but the sharp slap was necessary for me to see some reality about myself. And I suppose that was part of the waking up to the fact that I hadn't embraced the world as the world is offered. And then of course I had to start looking at everything about me. You know, I had to look at, I'm gay, but am I really? What is my belief system? Do I have a belief system? How sincere is it? I realized that I had been pretending in AA for a long time, pretending to myself as much as to anybody else that that I had this kind of belief in a deity. And it was a slow process to actually take myself, maybe three or four years, to actually look at that aspect in some depth, and to come to the realization that that I didn't believe in any of that, and to then it took some time to mourn it, because I kind of missed it. I missed believing in something that I didn't believe in. It's crazy, but that's the truth of it. I was very happily, eventually I was happy to be able to know what I did believe, and not bother too much about what I didn't believe, because I don't think that what I don't believe is really important to me anymore. My regular meeting is my one of my regular meetings is a We Agnostics meeting in Dublin on a Sunday morning. I'm grateful for it being there, as I'm sure you who are regulars at this meeting are grateful to be able to be in a place where I don't have to say anything about or apologize for anything I may say about my what I do believe, and that's been a, I didn't know it was a heavy weight on my shoulders, but it was when the weight was lifted, it was a blessing. I continue to go to other meetings, and this week I was at a group conscience meeting, which is always a testing event, and this one was actually gentle. It was really quite nice. No boxing gloves were seen, and they and again here in Ireland we have this perennial thing. It comes up all every couple of years. You know, we can't have women's meetings, we can't have men's meetings, we can't have gay meetings, we can't have, you know, we can't have. And they and the person was saying, you know, and that we agnostics need it, you know. And I didn't have to say anything because somebody else came in and said, you know, there's a chapter in the book called We Agnostics. So I don't think you can complain about that being the name of a meeting, you know. So you can talk, you can complain about all the others, but not that one. So, you know, I think we're well tolerated, us who don't conform, but yeah. Are we loved? Well, I hope so. And at that, I'll say thanks very much. It was good speaking. Thank you.